Maui Nui is on a mission to help balance axis deer populations for the good of our environment, communities, and food systems on the island of Maui. They've shared over 126,000 pounds of nutrient-dense protein with the Maui community. Secure your spot now. Become a snack subscriber and join in helping to build more resilient food and ecosystems on Maui. Visit MauiNuiVenison.com. That's MauiNuiVenison.com. And use promo code BEAR for 20% off your first order. You know what my favorite text is? A waypoint in the Onyx Hunt app to a goblin turkey. The list on the Onyx Hunt app features for chasing turkeys is long, but knowing exact public and private boundaries and land ownership details will help you find more places to hunt, whether that's on public or private. I'll be toting the Hunt app through the spring woods in a few states this year, and I recommend you do the same if you want more turkeys on your table. Also, Onyx has a special offer for you. Use code BEARGREASE to receive 20% off your membership at onyxmaps.com/hunt this spring. Outdoor adventure won't wait for engine problems. Things like hard starts, rough performance, and lost fuel economy are often caused by fuel gum and varnish buildup. Seafoam can help your engine run better and last longer. Simply pour a can in your gas tank. Hunters and anglers rely on Seafoam to keep their engines running the way it should the entire season. Pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store or visit seafoamworks.com to learn more. My name is Clay Newcomb, and this is a production of the Bear Grease Podcast called the Bear Grease Render, where we render down, dive deeper, and look behind the scenes of the actual Bear Grease Podcast. Presented by FHF Gear, American-made, purpose-built hunting and fishing gear that's designed to be as rugged as the places we explore.
You remember that in Deliverance when that guy come around the corner when he said, "Who's picking a banjo here?"
No,
you don't remember that.
Tell me the whole story.
Have you ever seen?
I've never seen the movie in my life.
I have not seen Deliverance either. I was not allowed
There's
to watch it.
There's some notorious scenes in that movie that
I don't want to hear about
it.
Yeah.
Did you ever see that movie, Dad?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
When did that come out?
Burt Reynolds, probably 1980.
Oh, 70s, late 70s, wasn't it?
I think it was probably 70, 71. It was the early 70s.
Oh, early, okay.
Yeah, I would say it was pretty early. I don't know. I can't tell you.
1972.
Yeah, this is an interesting topic of conversation we're going to have today.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. So what we do on the Bear Grease Render, if you're not familiar, this is your first podcast, there are two styles of podcasts under the Bear Grease banner. So we have what we just call straight up Bear Grease, which is our documentary style podcast, which is going to be multiple interviews telling a story, doctored up, music, soundscapes, really polished and produced. That's that. Then we have the Bear Grease Render, which is a group of us, there are five of us here right now, that are going to talk about the previous week's podcast, dissect it, talk about high points, low points. And so that's what we're doing. So that's what this is. I want to start off with you. Did you know that before Brent got here, or when he got here, we kind of started talking a little bit, and he said, "You know, Clay, I kind of da-da-da-da-da about the podcast." And I said, "Whoa, whoa, whoa, whoa." I said, "Save that energy for the render."
I'm a whirlwind of emotion right now.
Really?
After listening to the podcast. Oh, yeah.
Good. So what I want to say is I want you to be absolutely free to say whatever you think. Because
nobody's going to judge me?
No.
This is a safe place.
Okay, good.
Yeah,
nobody else.
A safe zone,
right?
Judgment-free zone.
I don't think so.
Okay, good.
But
it's not like the other podcast where we were really limited.
Right.
Well, we really held
it
back.
Was scripted.
Listen,
that was
this
all
is what
scripted.
Happens inside of social structures. Okay, so this is a social structure. You guys obviously are my friends. One of you is my wife. One of you is my father. Brent's not related to me. Josh isn't either. But you kind of build a bias of positivity towards something, or you want to spin something so it doesn't hurt somebody's feelings. Do you see? You guys can't fully be trusted.
So you're anticipating that people are going to be too nice, that they're not going to actually like this podcast.
If they were inclined, if they were so inclined, to be like, man, Clay, I really think you missed it on this one. Like, I would want you to say that. And just tell me why. I mean, that does me no good to have friends that don't tell me the truth. Now, all the other people that are listening that really aren't my friends, I don't want to hear it. But the wounds of a friend can be trusted, right? That was a joke. I want to hear what people think. And I could say things right now, I think, that would guide what you're going to say in 10 minutes from now.
I doubt it.
What do you mean, like leading us?
I just, it happens all the time. People just, they are led into a tone of the way things should be.
I can't be manipulated. I'm beyond it.
Good.
Not
like it.
Not today, Perry Mason.
Dad, can you be
my I can be led like a little sheep, man.
No,
he's got, you know, a believer
hat. Did you notice that Gary Newcomb is sporting his regular goatee, but his mustache is missing?
Yeah.
Should he be wearing one of the mustaches?
Yeah. We've got a package of mustaches over
there's
here.
There's even some gray ones in there.
So today on The Render, we have Brent Reeves. Man, you're looking sharp, Brent. I would say you have on a moderately worn pair of overalls.
Are those stonewashed?
Stonewashed. Acid washed overalls.
They are.
I noticed that you're running your Crocs in air conditioned mode.
Yep.
No socks.
Correct.
And you have a beautiful Bear Grease hat on. You actually look really good. I mean, it looks good.
Like after a poster
that,
boy.
After that introduction, I can hardly wait to hear what I've got to say.
Hey, let me say, I think that Brent might have the shine of a winner.
Oh,
he is.
Is that what it is?
I think so.
Well, since you brought that up.
Yeah, and...
Tell us, what'd you win?
Well, I tell you what, I took old Waylon to a coon hunt.
I saw that.
Over in East Arkansas at Crockett's Bluff. And we went out on his second UKC hunt, and by gosh, we won it. Won a cast. He did good. Did good.
Way to go, Waylon.
And I got pictures from Alexis.
Oh, really?
My stars.
After the win. Brent did is he went to a competition coon hunt, which described the mood, the scene, the vibe.
Man, it was a community center over in Crockett's Bluff. It's a real old community, and there's no township or anything there. It's just a community of people. There's nothing as far as a city or anything like that. But everybody got there, and you register as a UKC event. You have to be there by a certain time. You know, pay your entry. You got to be a member. Your dog's got to be registered. And I drew out with another guy hunting a walker dog, and one guy hunting a blue tick, and one guy hunting a black and tan. And great guys, great fellowship. Sportsmanship was good. I didn't find my coon. One of the guys I was competing against found it and said, there's your coon right there. You know, he didn't have to say anything. He could have just kept his mouth shut, and that tree would have been, according to the rules, would have been a circle tree, but.
Yeah.
Honesty and integrity prevailed, and it was good.
That's good.
It was really good. It was an enjoyable hunt.
So Waylon won his second cast win. Did he win the whole hunt or just the cast?
No, just that cast. There was not an overall winner. We had an early round, which started around 9 o'clock, and then the late round started at midnight. So it was a late, long night.
Yeah.
But we had a great time.
Good.
Way to go, Waylon.
I went hunting one time this week. And took Fern and my new pup, Hoot, and they treed one time, didn't see the coon. I'm not fully convinced it was there, but we're gonna try to do a little springtime hunting this year.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
It's fixing to get really good.
You think so?
The little ones will start when they come down. It's going to be everywhere.
Brent saw a deer. He sent me a video, Dad, of a deer completely submerged under the water except for its neck and head.
Yeah.
I saw that.
Did you say
it was on social media too? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. A doe, wasn't it?
A doe.
Yeah. Do you think she got scared hearing Waylon tree that close to her and just bedded down
in
the water?
It was Michael's dog, actually. It was right there beside her. And no, that deer was there 10 minutes before the dog came in there. We just happened to be standing there. There's a bunch of deer. The water's up over there where we hunt. Where Michael caught that coon.
Yeah.
And we watched him. That's 8 feet underwater right now.
No way.
Holy cow.
Inside that levee. Wow. Right there where we were at.
Holy smokes.
So
I've watched our friend Michael Roseman catch two coons by hand.
Yeah. I'll leave all
that. I was chasing down and catch them by hand.
You were there on
Pretty
the last
impressive.
One.
Carry on.
Yeah, we saw the deer. We actually, Michael shined a light up in there, and he said, "What's that?" And I said, "Is that a coon?" He said, "No, it's a deer. Look at it." And you could see, I mean, it was like a periscope death. Just right from the neck up, sticking up out of the water. You can barely see her hind end. But she was bedded right there.
Whoa.
And there was no mosquitoes. Buffalo gnats weren't bad. It was cool. So, I mean,
I
don't know.
I haven't decided if I feel like she was hiding because she saw you guys and just hunkered down in the water, or if she you think she's actually bedded down. But
man, I have you've walked up on deer before. Dogs treed close to them.
Yeah,
they don't do nothing. They just lay there.
Yeah.
So I have it's hard for me to believe that she wouldn't have walked off, that she would have just hunkered down in that water if she hadn't already been there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Weird though. It was pretty cool.
Well, I was just getting the introductions. Misty Newcomb.
Hey.
Good to have you here. Yeah. You haven't done anything like wild in the outdoors recently, have you?
Well, I mean, I got my garden going.
Yeah, Misty's got
it's pretty
a
wild.
Oh, Misty was on the Meat Eater live show in Billings, Montana last week.
Yep.
That was a big deal.
A lot of fun.
Yeah.
A lot of fun.
I saw that on Instagram. That was intriguing. I'd like to have seen more.
Unfortunately, that show won't be broadcast Meat Eater podcast feed.
Mainly
it's just a live show. That's why you got to go, man.
Oh, man.
Hey, there were at least 1,100 people there, as I understood it.
1,100?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Maybe more. And everybody that came got one of Steve Rinella's books.
Yeah.
Raising outdoor kids in an indoor inside world. Indoor world. Yeah. And so the podcast was structured around raising kids in the outdoors to be engaged inside of the outdoors. So it's pretty cool. And that's partly why they had Misty on there and me. We have kids. And so that was
incredible,
fun, wasn't it?
Incredible credentials.
Yeah,
we have kids.
We have children.
We produce.
You're bona fide.
Steve was quick to say it wasn't a podcast.
Yeah, that's right. It was a live show.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun. Chester Floyd played music at the beginning and end. Seth fleshed Coon
while
Beaver.
You guys were
the entire time right behind
he
us.
Was just standing
I saw
there.
Some pictures that I'm
he
like
was just standing there.
There's fresh. Some ambiance
so
for you.
If you got bored listening to us, you could just watch.
That's happened
Seth.
For me.
Oh, this is some. So after the event, there was people that were in this auditorium that work there, and they come in after the show and clean the seats and stuff. And there was an older lady that came up, and she said not to me, but to one of our guys. She said, "What was that woman doing with those coon hides?"
I thought she said, "What was that woman doing with all that meat?"
Well, yeah, that's what she said. But she thought Seth was a lady because Seth had but he had this big apron on. It looked like a dress from a long ways away. Yeah, you just walked in and you
I
just
saw
thought
it on
he
Instagram.
Was wearing a dress.
Yeah.
So anyway, we thought that was funny.
He'll never live that down.
Josh, you been fly fishing?
A little bit. It's been really, really wet here.
Yeah.
It has been raining like crazy, inches every day.
My strawberries.
And so I tried to do a little creek fishing yesterday, but came up empty-handed.
Mm.
But we went a couple weeks ago to the White River, and Christy caught a 21-inch brown trout.
Oh, I saw a picture of that one.
Yeah.
Wow.
And you caught me some rainbow trout.
Yeah, caught Misty some rainbow trout, brought them home. So
yep.
Clay and Misty grilled them.
Yeah. Dad, you been doing anything outdoors?
Well.
Fun?
You know, we took a little four-wheeler trip up in northwest Arkansas.
That's right.
I put the old Can-Am on the hill they call Highway to Heaven.
Yeah.
It did pretty good.
Was it straight up?
Yeah, pretty much.
See anybody new up there?
This was in Polk County. Actually, it was in Polk County, but it was a place
P-O-P-E.
We used to Jeep there. And as we were traversing this area, someone said, "That's the hill we used to have trouble climbing in Jeeps." And these new side-by-sides, I mean, they just go up stuff.
On a scale of 1 to 10, steepest you've ever done, how does it rank?
Oh, it doesn't.
Really?
Yeah.
It was a little scary
in that when you got to the top, there were really big rocks. You know, I thought I broke an axle on it, but it didn't. And that's a hard question because there's so many different type hills. You know, some hills you've got places where maybe you might flip over. You got some hills that you hit at a high speed. You got some hills you crawl. This was kind of a crawl hill.
Okay.
But it was not a big deal. But out of a group of about 10 vehicles, there were only two of us that tried it.
Oh, really?
Mm. Yeah. So and we both made it. It was fun.
Have you never come over backwards, have you?
No.
Never. No, that's amazing.
Well, on a four-wheeler one time, just playing around, I had one come over, but it wasn't even, you know, it was just a freak deal.
And you got off?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It was one of the first clutch machines I'd ever driven.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just driving up, stopping, and then rolling back. And somehow, I didn't do the clutch right. Came over. No big
just
deal.
Just flipped over.
Yeah.
I remember when I first started hunting with y'all, I didn't grow up on four-wheelers or anything. And Gary let me take his four-wheeler out. And I remember I tried to cross a log lengthways and got high-centered on the axles. And the look of disgust that Gary Newcomb gave me when he came around the corner.
You're a grown man.
Just thinking about it.
How could you have even let this happen? And he's like, get off. Let me.
Did you know that there's some... I tried back in the former Bear Hunting Magazine podcast days when we just talked about whatever we wanted. I was going to have Dad and John Mesko, who's Dad's best buddy down in Mena, tell some stories of them. Mesko more than once, like they had to haul him out of the woods in an ambulance or he broke his leg one time while y'all were out.
Yeah, in his shoulder one time.
In his shoulder one time, crawling up stuff, and Mesko flipped. They were way
back
in
there. And then, I don't know if you remember, but we were riding with some guys one time, and, you know, it was pretty crazy ride. And we just knew somebody was going to get hurt. And sure enough, this guy did. And when the ambulance came, I went to get the ambulance, and the two ladies were driving an ambulance. They said, you can't drive an ambulance back there. And I go, scoot over. And they let me drive this brand new.
Oh, I remember.
I got in this brand new ambulance, and I drove it, if you know Wolf Pen Gap, I drove that sucker way back into Wolf Pen Gap. And when I stopped, it was just boiling over with smoke. But the guy lived. I mean, he was really bad. Disappointed. I mean, this was a bad deal.
What happened on that wreck?
Well, he just hit a jump wrong, and the thing flipped on him. Instead of him doing anything to correct it, he just hung on to the handlebars, and it just drove his head straight into the ground.
Oh, man.
And Mesko was there.
On a four-wheeler. And a Mesko warrior, was, wasn't it? A Yamaha warrior.
Mm-hmm. It was a long time ago, and Mesko knew what to do, and he, you know, and I was steadily
Mesko's
going to go get the ambulance.
We just want to say, Mesko's a doctor.
Yeah, Mesko's a doctor. So you drove that ambulance all the way back in there. Well, the other time that they, or one of the times, they were riding, and it was just Dad and John, and John flips, gets in the wreck. You can go in the details or whatever, but they had to make a splint. And splint John's leg up and limp him out of the woods.
It was pretty interesting, him being a doctor. We're going down this deal. It looked like a cow's face. I mean, it was just straight down, but we didn't have any choice. We got back in there in the woods, got lost.
It's always the choice.
The commies made him do it.
And so I had John ride on the back of my... I said, John, we both have brand new side-by-sides. We don't know how they function. Four-wheelers. And I said, you ride on the back of my rack, because this is like driving off a bluff. So he got on my rack, rode down. So I started running back up the hill to get on his rack. But he thought, I can do this. Well, he got halfway down, and it didn't behave the way it was supposed to, or the way he thought it was going to behave. Mm-hmm. And it just like pitched him out into the air 15 feet up. And when he landed, it just snapped his leg, and then that side-by-side or four-wheeler just kept chasing him down the hill.
Oh, my gosh.
And it went five times, and when it got to the bottom, he's sitting next to a tree in the side-by-side, like right here, and it never touched him except the rubber. But to get him out of the woods, he goes, okay, cut six little sticks about the size of my thumb, 6 inches long. Get your tarp out of the back. Give me your duct tape. I had everything. And he just made a cast for it.
Was it his lower leg, like his shin?
Yeah. And so he rode my four-wheeler out, side saddle, with all that stuff on it. Took us about 2 hours, 3 hours to get him to the hospital.
When y'all hear that Indiana Jones music start playing, you need to stop whatever you're doing. turn everything off. Because this makes me get dangerous.
I'd say we have a choice.
Yeah, you have a choice, for real.
Yeah, you can cut that out. But anyway.
No, that's wild, man. Four-wheeler stories. I wasn't planning to go there, but we did. But that, so this podcast. Okay.
Oh, man.
It's interesting because Josh and Brent have emotions connected to the podcast that I wasn't expecting. Josh coming in saying, "What did
He's
you
tore
say?
Up?"
Yeah,
I'm a whirlwind of emotion. That's what I said.
You've got conflicting emotions.
Yeah, because I think the statement that caught me the most was Andy Brown when he was talking about Louis Dale, and he said he didn't do everything right, but he did a lot of stuff right. And that there's a juxtaposition there that's like, I think I feel the same way that you do, Clay. It's like, there's so many good qualities. And it's like, does one cancel out the other? You know what I mean? And so it leaves you in this quandary of like, and not that you have to in your life support or not support someone, but, you know, I've known lots of people in my life, obviously, as everybody has, but, you know, I remember when we first moved to Texas when I was a kid, there was a guy, we lived in this, well, we were poor. We lived in this little mobile home outside of this junkyard. Mm. And I thought it was the greatest thing in the world because I would go wander around that junkyard.
Yeah.
It was
like junkyard, Josh.
Heaven for me. Mm-hmm. But the guy that owned it, his name was Von Arnie. And I remember Von Arnie. You'd go in his house. And I remember, I was like maybe six at this time.
What were you doing in Von Arnie's house at age?
Well, his daughter would babysit me while my mom was working. Mm. And you'd go in the house and they had
trust your mom's judgment.
They had lots of mechanics and stuff that would come in. And like every night, they would just have 10, 15 people at the dinner table. His wife would just make enough food for a big group. But I remember Von Arnie, and I remember like he was always real kind to me. But then I would see him deal with people, and I knew, everybody kind of knew, like, you love Von, but you can't quite trust Von, mm-hmm. you know? And mm-hmm. everybody called him Von Arnie. Von Arnie. Hey, Von Arnie.
Really?
Yeah. And, but I remember that same kind of feeling about this guy. Like, I really like him, but there's something about him that's like, you just can't get settled about it.
Yeah.
And I, you know, listening to the podcast, it kind of made me think of those kind of feelings about Louis Dale. And
Von Arnie was a crook.
Absolutely.
Von Arnie was a crook.
Yep.
He was a con man. I think the thing about these two guys, you don't condone what they did. I mean, it's just wrong, period. There's just no two ways to skin that cat. But they did so many good things that the good people didn't even do.
Yeah.
I mean, they helped people that no one even knew about until the funeral. Yeah. They did things that were way beyond the normal human activities. I mean, they were just so you can't spin it where what they did was right. It's just not. But why do we like them?
Yeah.
And the reason we like them is because they love people, they help people, they treated people right.
I would completely agree with you because I think that in a sense some of the like the specifically the poaching, I think a lot of that was probably cultural, you know, from the way they grew up. You know, they took meat, and I'm sure, you know, there was a lot of distrust of the government. So, you know, Game and Fish coming in and saying you can harvest X number of deer and X number of turkeys is like, this is my country, you know. You can't tell me what to do in my country. And so, you know, I totally agree. You know, it made me think about the scripture where it talks about when you give, you know, don't need to be recognized for giving. And, mm-hmm. you know, thinking about all the people that they helped that nobody knew about but them until the funeral. And, you know, I think there's some very commendable traits. They didn't do everything right, but they did a lot of things right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think, Brent?
It was a struggle for me. You know, I've been in law enforcement for 31 years.
Yeah.
And I have always had the mindset that if I arrested you for something and you pled not guilty and we went to trial and you were found guilty, I always thought, well, let's go back and charge him with perjury because he's obviously lying because he did it. 12 people said he did. I found it very intriguing. I did not find them endearing at all. But
really?
No, not even a little bit. But I also don't know him. I don't have the background that Gary has, that Clay has, that you have from being around these folks. But it was it's hard for me, having been in situations where people, where good people, make poor decisions in the heat of the moment. It's hard for me to find an endearing quality in someone who leaves the house with the purpose of doing something that ain't right.
Yeah.
So the confrontation, and you know, I've said it on here before, if you want two different stories about an incident, get two people who said they were eyewitnesses to it, because people see things different. But to have the incident where it was a game warden or the park ranger, whatever it was, who was threatened over the dog.
Yeah, where Louisdale
when you put someone's, you point a weapon at somebody, or you put someone's life equal to that of an animal. You know, it's, life is precious, man, and I have seen so much stuff that people wished in that heat of the moment they wished they hadn't done. And I can't imagine taking someone's life over an animal like that.
Yeah.
If it ever happened. If that's the way it happened, you know. It was just a struggle for me to see that, or to try to rationalize anything in it.
That's why I wanted to hear your thoughts on it. Because your worldview would be coming from a career of law enforcement.
Yeah.
And that's the one place. What you wouldn't know is that I went to multiple people, not to get permission. I got permission and the blessing from the family. That's who I went and said, hey, I'm going to do this. I bounced this off many people. Law enforcement people too, some of them, people in government positions,
right?
Just kind of like, hey, what would you think if I did this? And it you know, you couldn't tell the whole story, and I didn't even know exactly what the story was. I mean, I kind of grew up around these guys, but I didn't know the full story like I do now, or more of the full story.
Did you meet them, Clay?
Oh yeah, I would have known them. I would have just been a kid. And I'll reveal later in the podcast, and I might tell you now because I don't think I'm going to include it, but like the times I met them, like we went to Louisdale's catfish shootout. Bow deal. I remember going to their house and eating catfish.
Shoot a catfish.
They hosted a big bow shoot, and Louisdale had a catfish farm. And then you would just see him around. I knew who they were, and I knew Stoney, and I worked with Charlie's son once for several months on a welding gig.
When you were a builder?
When I was a builder.
I think the telling the story is important for people to know, and I think it was good. There was another thing that bothered me a little bit, and it was some folks that commented after you've released it on social media, of that even after, I know of twice, if not three times, you said this is not glorifying or condoning what they did. And they were said, you know, we're kind of taken aback that you would talk about this, you know, that they kind of tried to throw some shade on you. And I want to say this right now. I don't know anybody that in the last couple of years during deer season, if it was this year or last year, whenever it was, they had a world-class whitetail, and not one for Arkansas, but one, a world-class whitetail in this part of the world that was only a few feet inside a piece of property that Clay didn't have permission to hunt, and he let that deer walk off, and he ain't never seen him since. And he was by himself, and there was no camera, and there was no witness. Those guys would have shot that deer.
Yeah.
I don't know. Hey,
that deer would have been in trouble if Louisdale were anywhere near it.
And I'm not saying that I wouldn't have either. But I know that you didn't. And I know the purpose behind this was not to glorify what they were doing, but tell a good story. And it is an incredible story.
That brings up a great point for me to, and y'all can help me work through this, because for real, I don't entirely have it all worked out exactly why I wanted to tell this story, other than much of the, well, all the topics in this podcast are going to be things that I am deeply intrigued by. I mean, that's the barometer. Like, where is my interest? Me and Dad and Scott Brown and Andy, everybody that's down in MENA. Oh, all you got to do to strike up a conversation with somebody is say something about Louis Dell and Charlie. We all want to talk about them. We all, I mean, I have no shame in saying I'm deeply intrigued by these guys. And not, and it wasn't because they were outlaws. It was the paradox,
sure, yeah,
that they were outlaws, yeah, with Game Warden. And you're going to see, you know, Louis Dell was a moonshiner, illegally making moonshine and stuff. But even inside of that, you'll hear the story and you'll kind of be like, oh, okay. But they were, and the way Dad said it was, they did a lot of things that the squeaky clean people that never killed an illegal turkey wouldn't do.
Yeah.
And that's where,
well, there's value in that.
Well, and it doesn't, it, so it's not, it's just the story I was interested in telling. And that's why in the very beginning I said, don't blame me if you're endeared to these guys, but also you get to make a choice. And I totally respect what you're saying, Brent, because it's not like, I mean, truly disdain breaking game laws. I'll turn you in a flash for breaking a game law.
You know, it's I don't know if it's braggadocious or what it is to be able to, if they killed a quarter of the what they were accused of, but you know, it's a selfish way to look at it, you know, because the game laws are set there for everybody, and when if they don't apply to everybody, they don't work, you know. And I mean, you look at where we are right now. Mr. Charlie and Mr. Louis Dell didn't cause us to, you know, have low turkey numbers now, but what would that be down there if that hadn't taken place? Who knows? That's a micro way to look at that as far as that area that they're from. But it was just, I just think it was a selfish way to look at it.
You know, I agree with everything you're saying. But there's another side. You being law enforcement, I came into the hunting world where all I knew was quail hunting from my dad. Mm-hmm. And I knew I didn't like it because he was such a crazy, I mean, he just hunted all the time. I mean, you know, not all the time, but when he went, it was work.
Right.
I go, man, I don't want any part of this. So I had nothing to do with the hunting world until I got 26. And so I was introduced to bow hunting, and I immediately fell in love with it, and I got to watching people. And I saw nobody. Now, take this literal. I'm telling you like I saw it. I knew nobody that wouldn't kill an illegal deer. And I'm like in a state of shock. I'm not going to do that. I didn't have uncles that taught me that. I didn't have a dad that taught me that.
Yeah.
Now, if you run up against Josh, and he's a city boy out enjoying hunting, you know, two or three times a year. Now, he's not going to kill anything illegal.
He read the regulations and just did what it said.
Yeah, yeah. But the diehard hunters, I'm telling you, from my perspective, you got to keep that in mind, my perspective, they all killed illegal stuff. So where do you draw the line? I killed one person. I killed 50 people. I mean, you're killing stuff that's illegal. And where is it bad? It's bad with one.
Yeah.
It's bad with 10. It's bad with 30. These guys took their bad ways and turned it into a game. And I mean, you know, whether you like that or not, but a lot of the people,
well,
a lot of the people that are real hardcore kill illegal stuff.
So when I was talking to one of the law enforcement guys, and I won't say his name, but he kind of dissected a little bit of me with the podcast. And he said, Clay, there are not old time poachers like there used to be. And Jimmy Martin said it too. There's a little bit of a potential. Well, I'm not justifying, and I don't have to qualify that I'm not justifying their actions.
Right.
But every time we look into history and see something that went on and then put today's value system on that thing, it doesn't mean that what they did was right then. That's not what I'm saying. But it is different.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what Dad's saying compares to what Jimmy Martin said and what this other law enforcement guy that I spoke with, he said, Clay, things are not like they used to be. He said the old time poachers are pretty much gone. And what he meant by that was, used to, you could go poaching or you could go hunting and illegally kill something, and you had to go home to a landline phone to call in the game warden. Anymore, we have cell phones, we have cell service. It's just much more difficult to hide stuff. You send a picture. So partly law enforcement methods, I think, have gotten better, but also it's just culturally not accepted. There's the exception. You know, there's somebody out there right now that's probably like, I used to do that. But these character types, like Louie Dell and Charlie, actually were fairly common. Like, I was talking to my friend, I'll say his name, Giannis Poutelis, and he said that he knew some guys in a state, and he said, Clay, they tried to kill a turkey for every year of their age, and they did it till they were 40.
Oh, my gosh. Every season?
I was kind of surprised by that, because, you know, you kind of think that, oh, these outlaws are probably as good as they come, or, you know, is notorious as they come, kill as much. And I told Giannis the story. He listened to it, and he was like, yeah, I knew some guys like that. And it was in a state that had incredible turkey populations, and it was in a part of the world that reveres turkey hunting. And these guys were just wearing them out. And they were basically doing the same thing as Lou and Charlie. They were getting dropped off and hiding guns. I mean, that's kind of the norm. The other reason that I did this is part of what makes light bright is darkness. I mean, it's like we have built such a system, and it's so deeply ingrained inside of me. Not that I do everything perfect. I've broke game laws before. But they're,
how dare you?
And I'm going to tell about them on the next podcast or two podcasts.
Or they can go back to the Arkansas Bear and Buck mm-hmm. Journal.
Yeah, you
and find
that.
The original.
Yeah. But I think it helps to see the big picture. And like I envision, maybe some people new to hunting, like you, Dad, that you said when you first started big game hunting, you'd grown up doing some hunting, but big game hunting, and you were like, well, those are the regulations. Everybody obeys the rules, right? And then you got in there and were like, nobody obeyed the rules. And that's just the way it was. I like the way Andy said it at one time when he said Louie Dell turned his dogs out on October 1st. He leaned out of his chair and he said, that's just the way it happened. Okay. Yeah. I'm not saying it was right. You know, anyway, point being, this is part of the culture that we're coming out of that I think we're doing a good job of saying we shouldn't do. Well, I tell you what this law enforcement guy told me. He said the big time poachers of today, he said they're ultra secret. You don't see them on the internet. Mm-hmm. Guys posting stuff on the internet,
they get caught immediately.
They're going to get caught.
Yeah.
But there are some people that are like high level poachers that you just don't hear about, you don't know about, but are killing an incredible amount of stuff.
Yeah.
Montana Knife Company was founded by Josh Smith, one of the world's most experienced master bladesmiths. He's been making knives for 30 years, made in the USA and manufactured locally in Montana. The knives come with a multi-generational warranty and free sharpening. Designed, tested, and built by hunters, MKC is a hunting knife company first and foremost. They have the sharpest knives out of the box and the easiest knives to sharpen. And that is the dadgum truth. You better be careful with them when you get them. They are sharp. MKC is a fast-growing company. They just hired their 55th employee and are looking to hire about 50 more in the next year or so. I've carried a lot of these Montana knives. And the one that I like the most is their Speed Goat, which is a lightweight hunting knife, just the right size. MKC knives sell out within minutes of being released. So head over to MontanaKnifeCompany.com. They have new knives for sale every Thursday at 7 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. So check their website and sign up for their text and email alerts. That is the best way to find out when they have knives available. Use code BEARGREASE10 for 10% off your first order. Montana Knife Company, working knives for working people. The old timers say that the turkeys start gobbling when the leaves are as big as squirrels' ears and the red buds start popping. And we're about there. And we are there in the South. The Onyx Hunt app is one of my most valuable tools in the spring woods. With tools like coniferous versus deciduous tree distribution layer, you can save time by locating edges or transition areas of mixing habitats from home. Find an area like this with water in close proximity, and more than likely, there will be a goblin turkey nearby. Knowing the exact boundaries of private ground ensures I stay on the right side of the fence, but can easily find public ground to go see if I can't strike a gobbler. If you do get one to sound off, using compass mode and waypoints will help you pinpoint his exact location, allowing you to move in and make the perfect setup to bring him right into your lap. Download the Onyx Hunt app today. You'll be glad you did. Onyx has a special offer for you. Use code BEARGREASE to receive 20% off your membership at onxmaps.com/hunt this spring. We've all seen plenty of gadgets and fads come and go, but here's one product that stood the test of time, Seafoam Motor Treatment. Lots of hunters and anglers know that Seafoam helps engines run better and last longer. It's really simple. When you pour it in your gas tank, Seafoam cleans harmful fuel deposits that cause engine problems. I'm talking common stuff like hard starts, rough engine performance, or lost fuel economy. Seafoam is an easy way to prevent or overcome these problems. Just pour a can in your gas tank and let it clean your fuel system. You probably know someone who's used a can of Seafoam to get their truck or boat going again. People everywhere rely on Seafoam to keep their trucks, boats, and small engines running the way they should the entire season. Help your engine run better and last longer. Pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store or visit seafoamworks.com to learn more.
So, Misty, what did you think?
Well, it's so interesting to hear people, I mean, to hear different perspectives, to even hear that there are different perspectives. I'm just listening to y'all, and I have a lot of thoughts. I was raised around outlaws. Do you know that, Brent?
Mm-hmm.
Like bikers.
Yeah, you told me.
And so my dad was a minister, and he'd go out to pretty rough places and, you know, built a lot of trust. So we would get invited to, you know, funerals and weddings and all sorts of things
right.
in some pretty messed up places. And those men were so nice to me. As a little girl, I wouldn't have told you that. You know, so I felt real comfortable and like these were my grandparents or my uncles. So those were the people that I was raised around. So I think I have a predisposition to see the kind side inside of pretty rough characters and to like that, to like people like that, just to feel safe with people who are, you know, maybe pull like weapons on, on people. But I was just thinking about like, you know, if you were to ask me, if you were to ask me who those people were, I would give you a description of really nice people, people that always kept candy in their pockets and gave it to me, people who, you know, just treated me real
special.
Yeah, and were real nice to me. But I guess if you were to ask, you know, I'm sure the victims of their crimes, like the guy he pulled the gun on, I would imagine he would not have a nice, who's to say,
perspective.
Yeah, who's to say what they really were? And I think that one of the things that we do a lot is we judge people based off of these really bad things they do. In reality, you know, I work in kind of a different circle now than I grew up in, and there's a lot of people that I trust that look really nice and that would never probably pull a gun on someone over a dog or for whatever reason. but I don't trust them at all. I don't think they're good people, and I don't feel safe around them, and I don't. Mm. I don't trust them at all, and they can walk into a bank and get a loan and be
look
treated
pretty and drive a nice truck and have pretty white teeth.
And I don't like them, and I don't feel safe around those kind of people. And I'm just thinking, like, what makes a person? When Andy Brown at the very end said they were just so pure, I thought that was such an interesting such an interesting way to describe them. They were just so pure, because it's.
That is the last thing I thought he was going to say.
Yeah, who are we really? And I think you see. In general, we want to be interpreted by our best attributes, and I think the reason that Clay and his dad have respect for these guys, and I actually didn't know them. My mom did, but I didn't. But they have heard this other side of them. I just think people are so complex, and that's why the story, Clay would come home and talk to me about these interviews he was doing and about these stories. And I really enjoyed the stories because I think it really shows the complexity of people. And I think this day and age, we look at people and we say, that person did this one time. And I'm not saying that's what you're doing, Brent, but I'm just saying, like, in cultural today, we look at things that people did, mistakes they made, times that have changed, and we say, that was evil, and that person is evil. In reality, people do all sorts of crazy things. You know, even biblically, if you look at people like that God loved, they did some really, really crazy stuff.
Sure.
And I kind of feel some sort of comfort in the sense that you're not judged by those, by your worst actions. Who you are is the sum of, you know, kind of more the core of you than the worst things you've done. Well, and I feel like that's the story the podcast kind of tells a little
bit. I just want to make absolutely clear, I'm not saying these folks were bad people at all.
No, I know.
Your point is 100% clear.
Yeah.
And I said in the beginning that I set out to resolve inner conflict, which is just the truth. Inner conflict of why do I like these guys? But what they did, I would absolutely not stand for. Like, if I was in that, if I turkey hunted and saw them walk out of the woods with a gobbler 2 days before season, I would be chasing them down in the truck to turn them in. And then when I figured out who it was, maybe I'd
You know, I think almost everybody has the feelings that Brent has, but not the depth. You've
got real world experience.
But it's like me. Hey, I was for the game wardens. I'll be honest with you. I love Charlie and Louisdale, but there's no way that I was for what they were doing. And here's another thought. Is I knew Charlie and Louisdale as humans.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, when I saw Charlie and Louisdale, I didn't think of turkey poachers, even though I probably really did, but I'm trying to make a point.
Yeah.
That they were hardworking people that I enjoyed being around. I enjoyed talking to them. They'd come in my office and sit down and tell stories, and they were just good folks. Now, they were turkey poachers, secondly. So, you know, we're looking at them as turkey poachers and then these people. But they were these people that poached.
Yeah.
So, I don't know if that confuses
things.
Well,
I see what it
says is that everything is complex. I mean, you know, like, I saw some comment where just somebody said, I don't revere these scumbags. And they were using my words because I said I revered them. And it's just like, I get it. There are places in that guy's life where I guarantee you he does revere somebody that if it was someone far off, he would say they're a scumbag. Point being, it's just a complex story being a human.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What were you going to say, Josh?
Well, I was just thinking, you know, there's a dichotomy here that, you know, we revere them and we don't like what they do. But I think a lot of times in situations like this, when you're talking about, for instance, poaching, there's got to be the thought in the back of a man's mind that this isn't really hurting anyone. You know what I mean? I think that's kind of a dividing line of what you say, what's a bad person, what's a good person. I think in the back of their mind, they're thinking, nobody's really getting hurt by this. It's just a law to try to keep you know, whatever, but I'm not hurting anybody by doing it. And I think that that can be easily justified away by the good things that you do. You know what I mean? Because you care about people and you look out for them and, you know, just killing a few extra deer, killing a few extra turkeys. Now, when we take into consideration, you know, pointing a gun at an officer, that's very ill-advised.
Well, let me tell you what, and this is kind of deeper nuance inside of the takeaway from it. And I hope this was maybe portrayed at the end of the podcast when I gave my summary. More than...
Oh, I never listened to that part.
You don't listen to that part. If you could take the mold of those guys, a mold, and put something else different, maybe a little different concoction inside of it. I said that those guys could have given a master class on identity and being genuine, which are two things that are massively, massively in the mix, in the fight for every person on planet Earth.
Yes.
Every person in this room. Like, the struggle of human nature is, who are we? And I mean, if you don't identify with that statement, it's just because I didn't say it in your language the way that you would, because you are. You are trying to find who you are. Who are you supposed to be? How are you supposed to act? What are you supposed to value? What are you supposed to say? Who are you supposed to love? Where are you supposed to work? Where are you supposed to put your energy? Where do you get your validation? Who do you want to say that you're good? Who do you want to, you know, identity? And most of us, and I'm putting me inside of there, our identity is shaped often in the negative space of, I don't want to be like that. I don't want to be perceived this way. I'm afraid of this. I'm afraid of that. And so a lot of identity is built out of insecurity. And what I saw inside of interviewing Charlie and Louisdale, now, I was just a kid with these guys, so it's not like I had personal adult interaction, you know, knowing them, was that they really didn't care a lot about what people thought. They had this shape of who they were. They weren't ashamed of it. And Neil Taylor said it so well. He said they were content with who they were. They didn't want to be anything that they weren't. And they had a value system that they kept their whole life. And they were the same way with a game warden as they were with their best buddy down the street. It's like, what has value as a human? The guy that, you know, let me ask every person that's listening to this right now. Have you broken a game law?
Yes.
Have you killed one more than you're supposed to? Misty Newcomb is the only angel here. Maybe Josh too.
What?
Have you ever broken a game law?
Accidentally.
Okay. Well, you're a poacher. No.
And a sorry individual.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Wow, I can't even believe you're here.
Bad shot.
No. Listen, here's my point, is that Charlie and Louisdale broke game laws and hid stuff, but they were upfront about it. They just, the game wardens knew it. They knew it. Everybody knew it. We all knew it.
People gravitate to someone that you can trust, even if you can trust them to be a poacher. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that comes into play with the identity. It's like,
the consistency. It's like
you're
predictable.
The thing that makes people feel unsure is when you have someone that you don't think
you can't get a read on.
Exactly. I mean, what makes you more uncomfortable than meeting someone and thinking, I have no idea what's going on inside of there. I don't know if they like me or they hate me or if they want to steal my money or stab me in the back or want to.
Andy said that. He said, Louisdale Edwards didn't beat around the bush with anybody. He was just up front. Do you have an example of the way he would have been?
Not really. I didn't know him as well as Andy.
Yeah.
But I knew him pretty well. I mean, we shot bows together, and he'd stop by the bank occasionally and just visit. But I really can't elaborate on what he said. I can't give you a story.
Yeah.
But I agreed with it. I mean, he didn't put up any facades. I mean, if you didn't like, you're a bow hunter and you don't like the kind of bow he uses, you know how we do.
Yeah.
If you got a recurve, you don't like my compound. If I got a compound, I don't like your gun. I mean, he didn't care anything about that kind of stuff. I mean, just, you know, he had dogs. If you don't like dogs, that's tough. You don't like my big guns, that's tough. You know?
Yeah. But I just respect the certainty of it. I just do. I mean, and what we've got to build is people that have a value system that's really good.
That's correct.
That have that kind of certainty. That have that kind. That's what I want. I mean, man, if there's one thing that I value inside of what I'm doing is that when I interact with people, and especially on something like this, when I'm really researching somebody, whether it's Warner Glenn or Daniel Boone or Louis Dell and Charlie Edwards, which it's wild that these
Warner
guys
Glenn's
are.
Warner Glenn's probably never broken a game law.
Oh, come on now.
Well,
the man's
part of
been
the podcast,
hunting since he was 14. I know you're joking.
Just kidding.
He's a very good feller.
Hey, one thing about these guys too. See, I was brought up in a home where, you know, it's pretty sterile, pretty pure. And in a way, Clay Newcomb was brought up in a home like that, and Misty was, and probably a lot of you guys listening.
He pointed at Brent and then kind of turned his finger away.
Yeah, exactly. Not Brent, but Dad's dad was a preacher. My grandfather was a preacher. So Dad is a preacher's kid.
So, you know, hey, we're not all dealt the same hand.
Yeah. Nope.
I mean, these guys were brought up by moonshiners that when they got up in the morning, their daddies and mamas were going, now, you guys study hard at school and don't be getting in trouble. And these are our rules and be good boys. But they come home and they're making moonshine. And the little kids are going, why are the cops got us surrounded? I mean, you know, they're brought up, they see their heroes and their mentors and their leaders and they're all a bunch of criminals. And so you got these little guys growing up in that environment. And when they break out on their own, you see this kind of, like Andy said, pure. I mean, I don't necessarily agree with that word pure.
Right.
But in a sense, you see this pure human that he's got honesty, integrity, a handshake's all you need. You just keep going on and on. You need help. He's there. Just bam, bam, bam. And you're going, wow. And the guy killed a few extra turkeys. Now, which way am I going to go with this guy? You know, and so they're brought up in an environment that, you know, they were making a living illegally.
Man, I didn't know what I was getting into when I talked to Stoney.
Yeah,
they literally just put out this 3-ring binder where they had laminated newspaper clippings from 1926.
Yeah,
and it was all this stuff about the moonshine and getting, you know, basically the police, you know, they were acquitted of murder, and we don't know the whole story, but man was killed. Six policemen were put on trial for murder. All of them were acquitted, and a man and his coon dog were dead. It's pretty
and a boy's
wild
ear
story.
Shot off.
yeah.
And it point being just, you know, that the story lines up. You know, the story lines up.
There's a trajectory there.
There is.
Hey, you know, this probably get me in a lot of trouble, so you can cut this out, but I've always said the mafia, when they tell you they're going to kill you, they're going to kill you. You know, in other words, you can trust them. I mean, there's an integrity inside of every little system that if it's dealt off of honesty, it usually works. And the only honesty the mafia has is if you disagree with them, you're probably going to die. But, you know, I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Charlie's little group, I mean, all they're doing is killing turkeys.
Yeah.
But they had this integrity that meant a lot to them.
Yeah.
And they lived within those boundaries.
Yeah, they had a code.
I think what Misty said, and Brent, I want to hear your real thoughts, because I would love it if you just went, you guys are full of malarkey, this philosophy stuff. But let me say this. What Misty said, when she said it, I was like, yeah. And I think this would be pretty deep inside of Misty and I in particular, is that there is a whitewashed righteousness that is just malarkey in the world, where you see people that have a glimmer, a shine of being perfect, and they're not at all. And I mean, that's part of what is so intriguing to me about rural culture and poor people and all this stuff is that the world has said these people are not of value. I mean, essentially in some bigger macro picture of where value is. And that is something that from a lot, I mean, just from birth, I kind of keyed in on that guy may look pretty, but he's a bad guy. That guy may have some rough edges, but he's a good guy. And that's like real strong inside of me. Like I would rather, well, and there's all kind of proverbs about stuff like that. You know, better to say you're not going to do it and then do it than to say you're going to do it and not do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so might as well just portray yourself as whatever you want to portray yourself as.
A lot of that comes with the unknown. In other words, if I know Brent and I know what to expect, he can, you know, he can do a couple of little goofy things and it's okay. I know what's going on. But if he's all polished and shined and trying to sell me a bill of goods and he's a con man, like I shouldn't have judged your old buddy like I did. It made the point, you know, a guy like that where you're going, wait a minute, he treats me like a king and then he's like giving this guy a raw deal. But
it's you're getting something that you don't see with your eyes.
You know, I want to see the whole guy, then I can deal with it.
Right.
Even, you know, go back to the mafia, which is kind of stupid. All I know is I don't do a couple things, they're not going to kill me, you know.
Yeah.
So at least I know where I stand. I don't want to be around these people.
Yeah.
But a lot of folks around, you know, we don't know what we're getting.
Yeah. What do you think, Brent?
Well, you have an opportunity to make good choices and bad choices. And there's always circumstances for that. The incident with the dog, true or not, but I'm sure there's other things that have happened like that, not just to them, to a lot of people. You put your, they were out there breaking the law. And so they put themselves in that position. You know, nobody told them to go run dogs on October the 1st. That may be what they did, but that doesn't make it right.
Right.
And it brings up a incident or an opportunity for something tragic to happen. Tragic, something tragic did happen when the guy and the coon dog got killed. You know, number one, why ride around in a car that ain't got no brakes in the mountains? That was one thing I took away from that.
I got some follow-up questions.
That was, you know, if he couldn't stop, why was he out there driving that thing anyway?
I had a feeling that could have been a family spin.
The moonshine, making moonshine, they wouldn't have been after him if they had not been making moonshine.
Yeah.
Now, you know, my dad, before I was born, couldn't find a job in Southeast Arkansas. He went to Ypsilanti, Michigan, and worked for Ford Motor Company up there on the assembly line because that's how he had to feed his family. He didn't stay at home and poach
make
turkeys.
Moonshine.
Yeah, make moonshine.
That's a great. I love it, Brent. That's a good example. Right, so there. Your dad would have been about in the same era as these guys.
Yeah. But my father had an absolute disdain for authority. He didn't like the police, and he got a whole family full of them. But
man,
which is another story.
Yeah.
But I mean, you see, you put yourself in those kind of positions, and if you don't, a lot of that badness goes away. You know, I see some. In my career, I've seen a lot of sadness and a lot of things that I wish I could not remember. But I know that they were the majority of the people that I saw do the most hideous things have also done some good in their life, you know?
Right.
And they just got caught up in a bad deal, in a bad situation, and they didn't see a way out. And we're not talking about murdering folks, we're talking about killing turkeys. And I realize there's a heck of a difference, but right is right and wrong is wrong. And you make a choice and you put yourself there and they say, the old saying is, if you play stupid games, you'll win stupid prizes. So,
yeah.
That's about my take on it.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's good. I think it's a really strong point what you said. That and it's apples to apples. saying, my dad didn't have a job, and he moved to Michigan and worked at a Ford line. He didn't stay home and make moonshine and kill turkeys. I mean, that's a valid point, you know. So everything that's been said is right, and that's exactly why I wanted to tell this story, because it's an interesting human story. And if nothing else, it'll make us have discussions like this, which I think are valuable.
Absolutely.
And it'll bring some, you know, there's value in looking back. I mean, like, if it was wrong to talk about bad stuff that happened, then we would have to shut down the entire century between 1800 and 1900 on every level of human life.
Yeah.
And we wouldn't talk about it. Well, that happens to be one of my favorite periods of American history. I mean, you know, I mean, the market hunting and all the wild stuff that happened. And so we can look back in history and we can see stuff and we can learn from it. And this one, it's a simple learn. I mean, obviously, we're not condoning anybody go kill a bunch of turkeys. And if you do, you're stupid.
Or pulling guns on
anybody.
Anybody. Good call, Brent.
And it's not everybody. Cool. If a guy did that today, outright just would be a selfish, egotistical jerk. I mean, there would be no place if a guy today. But and again, this was a long time ago. And maybe that is pharisaical of me to say that. But, and I'm not saying that it was good. I'm just saying these guys had character traits that were valuable. And that's what I'm interested in looking at. Because, man, you can look at a bunch of people that did a bunch of stuff right all the time and not have the tools that you need to be successful. Like, we got to look at a whole bunch of stuff. Everybody messed up, did stupid stuff. You know what I mean?
True. Mm-hmm.
People are complex. I mean, that's the takeaway from the
people are complex
from the whole story is that, man, people are complex and they pull out complex emotions out of us. I mean, I think about all the different people that, I mean, even think about your dad, like you probably have all sorts of complicated feelings about him. You know, I'm just calling your dad out because he's not in the room.
Right.
But think about your, you know, like you probably have really positive feelings about him and really, really negative ones as well. And you could say, my dad built this stuff in me and that was really good. And my dad built this stuff in me that wasn't. And I think we've got a culture right now that says, well, if there's anything bad, we're going to cancel the whole person.
Yeah.
And I don't like that.
Yeah,
I don't like that. I think that's really unhealthy. And I think the value of what you did in this story, one of the things I appreciated about it is that you kind of showed this complex picture of these people. He'll pull a gun on someone. And I don't feel like he told the best stories I've heard about him.
Oh, there, man, I feel like wait there's till some the second legendary, episode.
I'm talking about positive stories. I think there's some really good stories about these guys that didn't get told because they're kind of hard to trace back and tell, you know.
Yeah.
And I think some of the reason that I find these men endearing is because some of those stories. And those were the first stories I heard.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, I didn't hear about the turkey poaching. I just heard about this other stuff.
Some of those are going to come out in this second podcast. So, Just for those following along, there was a Genuine Outlaws Part 1. There's going to be a Genuine Outlaws Part 2, which is going to be another bio piece on Louis Dell and Charlie. So it's just going to be more stories. Except this one, they get it's less poaching and more just some kind of wild stories about these guys, which in some ways is just entertaining to hear, and it just paints a colorful picture. And I think that it shows an image of this part of the world. And I just want to tell that story. The third podcast in Genuine Outlaws Part 3 is going to be...
Foreshadowing.
I don't want to say because I'm uncertain who... I've gotten,
what happens in Part 4?
I've gotten three people that are willing to talk. And man, they're like high-level people that want to comment on this very particular thing.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the interesting part about this is that there are people who want to talk who are positioned to be against these people. Even the the game wardens were...
I was shocked at what Jimmy Martin said.
And they will not talk to Clay unless they're like, well, we want to know that these are good people. We want to know the family is supportive of it. And it's just, it speaks to their character that people care about what they think.
You know, one thing Jimmy said that I might have misunderstood it and I didn't agree with it. I don't think Louis Dell and Charlie built this myth. They told facts.
Yeah.
I think it's like Bonnie and Clyde. Every bank robber, that every bank that was robbed was done by Bonnie and Clyde, so the story got bigger than it really was. I'm hoping that's kind of what he meant, because, well, Charlie, for sure, he was kind of a humble guy, the little bit I knew about him. I mean, he wasn't going to go in Lime Tree and brag about killing a bunch of turkeys out of the bucket.
Well, I'm glad you said that, because when I, as soon as the podcast came out, Neil Taylor texted me and he said, Clay, they killed every turkey they ever claimed to have killed. He said, they like to talk about it. They like to brag a little bit. Probably talking about Louis Dell.
Sure. Yeah.
He said, but they were not liars.
That's right.
And
absolutely.
I felt like there was some journalistic integrity in me putting that in, just because Jimmy Martin, that's what he thought, and he had a right to have an opinion of whether they really killed as many as they did, and the tendency would be for the story to grow, even though when he said it, I was thinking, they killed every turkey they said they did. I really believed it, but I felt like I owed it to Jimmy to put that in there.
He did such a great job.
Yeah.
He just made the story. But I think that one particular place, people like Andy and myself and other people would go, no, if they told you they killed 36 turkeys, they killed 36 turkeys. I mean, that was part of the beauty of these guys.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. I'm really glad you
just
said that.
Just for the listeners, can you guys tell us what the Lime Tree is?
And the Holland House.
Landmark
restaurant in Mena, Arkansas.
Where everybody would go.
There's
and
a handful
the
of restaurants.
It used to be the Holland House. Andy Brown mentioned the Holland House. He said, they need to go down to the Holland House and say the
Yeah.
So we're going to end this podcast on a high note, okay? Gary Newcomb hunted with Charlie Edwards one time when he first came into Mena. And I'll tee you up a little bit with a little drama. So Dad was a banker, a young banker in a small town. Young,
with a young family.
With a bunch of little rugrat kids. And came into Mena. And, he was... And he's got his reasons for why he went hunting with a guy. But you didn't know the full story of who this guy was. He was your customer, and he invited you turkey hunting, and you were like, I'm going to go turkey hunting.
No, don't get too carried away.
Okay.
Did he invite you turkey hunting in early March?
I invited myself.
Okay. Well, tell the story.
Well, I turkey hunted for about 10 years, and I didn't, I killed a few turkeys, but I just wasn't getting it, And I didn't want anybody to call a bird. I just kind of wanted to do it on my own. And finally, I just told a friend of mine, I said, I think I need to go out with a really good turkey hunter. And he said, well, I'm hunting with Charlie. I'm going to hunt in this group with Charlie Edwards Saturday if you want to come on. And so anyway, I talked to Charlie, and he said, yeah, come on, I'll take you hunting.
Had you met him up at
the... Yeah, I knew him. I knew him, but I can't get all those details exactly right. But there was a third guy involved, a realtor.
Okay.
And so anyway, a friend of mine called me and said, man, you can't go hunt with these guys. The game wardens, they're going to be thick as thieves out there after them. And I go, well, I'm not going to do anything wrong, which might have been stupid. I don't know. But I said, I'm not going to do anything wrong, so I'm going. And so I went. And we ended up killing three birds, and one big bird gobbled, which I just thought about this on the way up here. One big bird gobbled, and we didn't go after it. And I thought, why aren't we going after that bird? I'm thinking he was saving it. Mm. So we go over here where there's a bunch of younger birds, and he calls in a whole flock, and end up killing three of them.
He does.
He did. He did. They were coming up on his side. Actually, he killed two. And he was wanting me to kill him. And I go, they're on your side. I can't get around, blah, blah. And so he goes, okay, bam, bam, kills two. and then he goes, you may call him back in again? I go, yeah. And so we move about 10, 15 yards on this knob. He calls again. Here they come again. And they come up on his side. And anyway, he goes, shoot. I go, man, I can't get a beat on them, and bam. So He's got three
he's
birds.
He's killed three turkeys. There's a three bird limit in Arkansas.
So, you know, I go, you going to tag those birds? And he goes, nah. And so I didn't want to be an accomplice to some major crime, so I didn't say anything. But we went to the store.
Which made you an accomplice.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
So anyway, I mean, I said, okay, you know, that's your choice. And we go to the store to check it in there at Big Fork, and he didn't sign them in, didn't have them tagged, had them in the back of the truck right in front of the store. And a game warden pulls up right at the front door. I mean, I'm like, as much as I like Charlie, I'm like, I'm kind of for the game wardens, you know? I mean, I want some of these birds for myself. And so guy comes in, and Charlie just starts signing these birds in. Hey, how you doing here, game warden? And, you know, meet my best friend here, Gary Newcomb, and his, this realtor.
So you played interference for his crime.
So, you know, we just got to talk, and the guy never went out and looked at the back of that truck. And but it was just real fun. Charlie was real nice and polite, and, you know, he could call like a crazy man. And, I mean, he had that big, long, 32-inch barrel on that gun.
Yeah, 30. I asked Stoney, it's 30.
36, maybe.
36.
I mean, it's...
Wow.
He called it a long time.
Long time, yeah.
I mean, that sucker would be way out there.
But the point of it, and the way I remember Dad telling it so many times, was that the game wardens could have caught him. The game warden didn't do... And it wasn't Jimmy Martin.
It wasn't Jimmy Martin.
It wasn't Jimmy. It was a different game warden. And he just pulled right up in front, right close to Louisdale's or Charlie's truck, and walked in, and Charlie saw him. And if the game warden had just walked over to the back of the truck, he just would have seen untagged birds.
Right.
Not signed in. Because back then, you had to put a tag on it and sign it in.
And sign it in, yeah.
And so, it just the way it worked, it was just no big deal. And it was kind of a fumble, it felt like, if they were trying to catch him. Is that, yeah, that's the way I interpreted it.
That's the way it appeared to me.
So, yeah. In all the years, they never got busted.
Well, wait till episode two.
Foreshadowing.
Wait till episode two.
Not for turkey hunting. I don't think. Maybe earlier.
Well, but. I will foreshadow. They have been, but they did get busted with illegal turkey hunting early on when they were young.
Why did you just? That's not foreshadowing. That's like jumping to the
punchline. Straight up shadowing.
you're like just that's shining a light on something.
Yeah, that's shining a light.
Well, I mean, I pretty much said it.
He did.
In the podcast, didn't I?
Yep.
Yeah, I think it's good. Or Isaac could just beep that whole thing out.
Yeah. Like 3 minutes of
being. Like you went on a cussing tear.
No, so that was always, everybody always got a big kick out of that story, and they still do in Mena today, that Gary Newcomb went hunting with Charlie Edwards. And Charlie killed three
Outlaw
turkeys.
Outlaw Gary Newcomb.
Yeah. Let me tell you, we'll end right here. The one interaction that I had with Charlie Edwards, like face-to-face, like where we were talking, the only time I remember talking to him, I must have been a teenager, and I was at Big Fork, and I cannot remember who I was hunting with, but I was hunting with somebody. We pull up to the Big Fork store, and we're in our camo, and it's turkey season, and well, there's Charlie Edwards, and we just kind of meet him, and he's like, I assume, I do not remember this, he said, well, y'all do any good? And we talk about turkey hunting, and he has the long tom in his truck, which is this giant gun. It's spray painted green. When I saw it, it was spray painted like a spring green.
Mm-hmm.
And he pulls the gun out and he says, look at this. And he hands me the long tom, and I'm holding it in the parking lot. And he goes, look down the barrel of that thing, Clay. And the phraseology of it and my young, non-abstract thinking childhood mind thought that was an odd way. Like I said, look down the barrel. And he said, yeah. And I said, is it loaded? And he said, yeah, don't pull the trigger. He for real said that. The gun was loaded, which would have been illegal to drive around. But he said, and what he wanted me to do was just shoulder the gun and aim look it down the barrel.
Yeah.
Well, I put the butt of the shotgun on the ground and look down the barrel.
Mm. And he's like, this kid.
He's like, what are you doing? He never said anything, but he had to have been just like, what is this kid doing?
This guy's an idiot.
But I remember really questioning him. I said, Look down the just look down the barrel.
Safety first, Charlie.
Is it loaded? Yeah, it's loaded. Don't pull the trigger.
There's psychological studies that have been done on this phenomenon where you do something you know you shouldn't do.
Yeah.
Just because someone says to do it with confidence.
Yeah, if he would have been like, jump off the cliff, I'd have been like, really? I was probably 16.
But leave my gun.
I don't know.
Don't take my gun with
you. So that was, I have a look down the barrel of the old Tom, like many a gobbler. Yeah.
You may be the only thing with a beard that lived through that.
Oh, hey, while we're closing, Bear Grease merch is all over. Bear Grease hats are like for real in right now.
Yep.
You can order real Bear Grease hats.
I can stop getting them from China now.
Yeah. Somebody ordered one of those knockoffs and it was pretty rough. There's also the Akron Bear Grease shirt, which is my favorite. There's also an owl.
That looks a whole lot like a Landbridge mustache.
Yeah, it is, does. I think.
I'd say so.
I say that. If you haven't seen this shirt, it says Akron AK. 2000 Clay Newcomb.
I was going to talk over
it. I'm sorry.
It says AKERN as in Akron, the way that 20% of the country pronounces it. And there's a big, beautiful Akron that's the shape of a man's head. Akron has a beard and a giant mustache that says Bear Grease. This is an epic t-shirt design.
I love it.
So you can get that. And then there's another cool t-shirt design.
I believe
design.
I saw that t-shirt design scribbled on a legal pad at one point.
Yeah. 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 I designed this. Do me a favor. Go buy one. Wear it proudly. Then there's another shirt of a barred owl, a beautiful rendition of a barred owl, full eagle, spread eagle, spread owl. Yeah. And it says like a quote. Ooh, 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 ooh. And it says barred owl. You know, like
I love it.
Like
yep.
Someone said something and you put their name
phonetically.
Quote.
Yeah, and it pronounces it phonetically. And then there's another beautiful shirt of a jar of Bear Grease that says Bear Grease, and then it lists all the different uses of Bear Grease underneath it. So it's pretty cool shirts.
Nice.
So and then there's the Gary Newcomb Believer hats. Dad's name is actually on the website.
He's got
Have you seen that?
No, I haven't.
Yeah.
Is it really?
Signature hat.
It says inspired by Gary Newcomb, the Believer hat. They sold out of those in like a day.
Wow.
But I think they're getting them back. So, hey, great conversation. Thank you all so much.
You're welcome.
This show is sponsored in part by BetterHelp. Around New Year's, we get obsessed with how to change ourselves instead of just expanding on what we've already done right. Maybe you finally organized one part of your space and you want to tackle another. Or maybe you're taking your supplements every morning and now you actually want to eat breakfast. In the last year, I've been more diligent about going to the gym on a regimented schedule, and it's made a lot of difference in my life. Therapy helps you find your strengths so that you can ditch the extreme resolutions and make changes that really stick. Therapy is helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Celebrate the progress you've already made. Visit BetterHelp.com/grease today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com/grease. Outdoor adventure won't wait for engine problems. Things like hard starts, rough performance, and lost fuel economy are often caused by fuel gum and varnish buildup. Seafoam can help your engine run better and last longer. Simply pour a can in your gas tank. Hunters and anglers rely on Seafoam to keep their engines running the way it should the entire season. Pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store or visit SeafoamWorks.com to learn more.